Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. I'm excited to welcome guest author Dr. Sylvia Hornback this morning. In addition to her career as a writer, Dr. Hornback has extensive experience in the field of education. She served as an educator, principal, and school superintendent for over two decades. Dr. Hornback received her Doctorate of Education Administration from Texas A&M University and serves as the current chair of the Board of Directors for Energy WorldNet Incorporated. Dr. Hornback was recognized as a National Blue Ribbon School Principal by the U.S. Secretary of Education. For the past 10 years, she has served as a Bible study teacher at First United Methodist Church near her home in Decatur, Texas. Her first novel, The Mallard Conspiracy, was published in 2018, and her most recent release is entitled Gene. Good morning, Sylvia, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Patty. It's so nice to be with you today.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you. I thoroughly enjoyed your book, and we're going to talk about that. And you also have extensive experience, as I mentioned in the introduction, in education. So there's quite a bit that we're going to be able to talk about this morning. It's always so nice to talk with somebody who is knowledgeable in their field and likes to talk about it and likes to talk about their writing. So it's just great to have you here. So, You chose a career in education, and you're also a published author. Are there certain childhood experiences that influenced you to take that path in your life, both as a Christian, as an author, and as an educator?
Yes, both of my parents were educators. They were teachers, and my dad was a principal as well, and that was a great influence as far as that seemed like the only path I was going to take. So as a young woman growing up, there weren't many choices for women then. So it was either you got a business degree, which women often would then become a secretary, and a teacher or a nurse. So because of my parents being in education, that was a great influence over my choice.
Sounds like you and I grew up around the same era, Sylvia, because, you know, there you were. Yeah, secretary, nurse, or teacher, and I took the nursing route. So there were nurses in my family. I had three cousins that all went to nursing school, so I kind of followed that suit. So I understand exactly where you're coming from. What about your Christian background, Sylvia? Did you grow up as a Christian? Was there very strong Christian influence in your family, or was the Christian life something that came to you later on?
It came to me very early in my life. I can, as far back as I can remember, that I had influences of the church. Initially, it was in the Baptist church, but I lived with my grandmother for 5 years, and that was a big influence in the Methodist church. She and I walked to church every Sunday, and she was a huge influence over my beliefs and what it meant to me in my life.
But once again, it sounds like we kind of have a little bit of parallel there, because my mom and my sister and I used to walk to church. My mom was visually impaired and unable to drive, and thank goodness our church was close enough. We were able to walk down the block to church, and I was also raised in the Methodist church, but then when I moved out here to Colorado, I became a little bit eclectic because I became involved with the Catholic Church. And now I'm with the Presbyterian Church, so I have quite a background there.
Yes, you do.
What motivated you? First of all, what made you even interested in getting into writing? How did you jump from the education track to writing? And what motivated you to write this latest novel entitled Gene?
Well, that's a big question, and let me just tell you that I feel like I became an author by accident, because on long trips with my husband and I, driving in long distances, you know, you do all kinds of things to stay entertained. And so I would tell stories, or I would tell what if. Well, what if we did this? What would we do? That's what was the impetus for my first book, because it's about a couple who were interested in the theme behind that book is about water rights. It was kind of a what's off the grid and what do you do? And so that's what started that. And my husband said, oh, we're going to write a book to some friends. And I said, oh, my goodness. After he had announced it to the world, I'm always a person of my word. So I went back home. I said, well, now I have to do this. So that's what started the first one. But I'd always, always had the story about Gene and that whole situation about abuse in the back of my mind because of interviews that I'd had with these certain women.
Yes, and you have quite a bit of experience in working with abused women, and we'll get into that in a minute here. But I'm curious to know, you decided to write this book. Did you take any writing classes, or how did you develop the craft, I guess is my question. Not very many people say, oh yeah, I'm going to write a book and it's going to get published, and it does.
Well, I did a lot of looking on my own, but I'd had quite a bit of experience in writing, but not in novel writing. I'd had a lot of technical writing experience. I'd written curriculum in education. And, of course, I used what, you know, skills that I had with that, and then just delved into how do you go about doing this, and used some of the things that, you know, you use in a lot of writing and forming an outline, getting your story down. And, of course, after you get all of this on paper, if I said anything to anybody about writing, it'd be sure you have a good editor. So
absolutely.
I had a lot of writing background. I was not afraid to jump into it. I just had to make the decision to do it. It was amazing. After my profession in education, then my husband and I have a software business, and in that is training. So I've written curriculum for that over the years. So, and been an editor myself. Of course, you certainly don't want that for yourself when you're doing it, but I mean, I've been an editor for other people.
Yes.
That gave me the background. The research part of what I have done and why it developed into a historical novel is because I've enjoyed research when I was doing my doctorate. That fell naturally into being sure that I was accurate with my facts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure that just being an educator, you probably had grammar and spelling and all that down already, and that can be a major problem for people that just decide to sit down and write a book if they don't have a strong background in that, as I know from having done some editing myself.
Yes.
So you already have, and the ability to formulate your ideas and get them down there in a organized fashion and everything. So you already had the basics, but sometimes you wonder when a person has another whole career and they just say, oh, I'm going to write a book. Well, very few people really do that. So I wanted to congratulate you and say good for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I did find a passion when I started writing. It's just something that I really enjoyed doing.
Well, good. Well, even though, and you touched on this a little bit, even though your novel is based on some personal anecdotes and experiences from your own life, you chose to set the story in a completely different setting than the one in which you grew up. Why did you choose World War II? You could have chosen any other era in history, but you chose World War II. Was there a particular reason for that, Sylvia?
Well, I think because living with my grandmother, and she certainly was that era and even before, and lived through the Depression, it was a topic that I felt that I was familiar with. Both my parents, of course, experienced World War II, and I had knowledge of that as well through them. So that's a reason that I chose the World War II era, and from the women who I interviewed.
Yes, yes, and I was going to say that also probably provided some anonymity for some of the situations that you brought into the story that you had actually heard about in reality. Nobody could ever trace anything back to what you had heard because it was a whole different setting.
Exactly. And that was the reason that I chose a different time period, yes.
Oh, that was very smart. You address many different issues in the novel, Sylvia, and some of them I probably haven't even touched on, but one of the most prominent is the abuse of a child by a parent, and not only abuse, but also abandonment. Sadly, both of these have existed in every generation. How do you think we handle child abuse differently than it was handled in the past?
I think in the past, things were not as open. Certainly, you know, the media and the way we communicate today is instantaneous. But then, not only the way we communicated, but also I think the way people thought in the culture, particularly, and I'm going to say this in the area that I chose, in the Texas or South, that people didn't talk about anything that was bad or not good in a family. So you just didn't talk about it. I remember my grandmother saying things like, well, we just don't talk about, you know, a cousin or somebody. And I thought, well, okay, I think we thought about that, but you wondered a little bit, but you really were not aware. And so that kept things a secret. It also made people who were in those kinds of situations know they shouldn't talk about what has happened to them as well. It was really a big secret. And I think we are making progress, you know, as a people to move forward and to get things out in the open and create accountability.
And I think that's true of just about every aspect of any kind of personal situations, Sylvia. Back in the day, you didn't even talk about somebody who was an alcohol or a drug abuser. That was just something you just didn't ever talk about, and kids certainly didn't ever address that in school. It was a big secret. You didn't even tell your friends. You kept it to yourself, and you just dealt with it and endured it, and you didn't even consider seeking help because it just wasn't the thing to do.
Well, and I think that anyone that did talk about it was blamed rather than what the situation was. So you just didn't say anything. Also, one of the things that really came to light in this is one of the, I think, more shocking points in the book is about the fact that it's the mother in the situation that is the abuser. And this was a common thread with my interviews.
That was a common thread with your interviews, really?
That's why I chose to choose that topic to write about, yes.
That it was usually the mom and rather than the dad, huh? That's really interesting.
Well, it is interesting, but it's, you know, rather than the dad, I don't know, I don't have a huge amount, under 30 subjects, but for that to come up that often, I thought it was something that needed to be said. And I've had a response in some of the people that have read the book that have said, well, finally someone has flipped the switch. In other words, shine a little light on what, on another topic that perhaps, because it's very shocking, because we always think of the mother figure being the one that loves and cares for the family.
Sure, you think of the mom as being the nurturing one in the relationship.
Yes, you do. And that because it was something that I heard several times, that's why I decided to write the book, Jean.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, you certainly hit the nail right on the head, Sylvia, to use a cliche. You did a very good job of addressing this topic. You have been exposed to abusive family situations through your role as an educator over the years, as well as through work with battered women. And what are some other common threads that you see in the behavior and attitude of abused women, besides the fact that sometimes it's women that are the abusers?
Well, and certainly it's girls and boys that are, you know, suffer abuse. But I think that whether it is the mother or the father or some other family member that is doing the abusing, I think that the reaction is very similar in that they lose confidence, they're frightened, they don't trust people. It's very difficult to overcome that and believe that someone really cares or about you or loves you. So that's, I think that is a thread that I saw in the people that were talking to me, and how they overcame it was their belief in God, is that they had a deep faith that helped them walk through that.
Yes, and that's always a wonderful thing to hear the stories of people who do come through a very difficult time through their faith. I think that gives us all hope that there is something better out there. Also, these women, if I'm not mistaken, have a difficult time with making choices and standing by their decisions.
Well, they're afraid that they're not making the right decision and that someone's going to come and tell them that they've made a poor decision. And so it's very difficult to, you know, stick with that. Although I've seen some very strong women come at, that because of their faith have, they're very comfortable and very confident in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sylvia, you work for Wise Hope House, is that correct? Or have worked
well,
with them?
Well, they are an organization that's in this area for anyone that is battered and abused, and that means women, children, and men. And that's the name, and they have a place where people can go for refuge that is, you know, a secret place so that the abusive spouse can't find them or the abuser can't find them. So I've done some work with them. I don't work for them, but I work to help the organization. I've done some things like put together clothing that is suitable for them to be able, for a woman to be able to go and get a job, and also donating things to the place and helping raise awareness in our area. It's also a national thing with the Women's Club of America. I mean, of the, it's an international organization of the Women's Club, and the, so that was primarily where I was introduced to this particular house and in this area, the Wise Hope House. And Wise County is the county for people who are abused.
We don't have anything like that around here, so I was just kind of curious to know. I'm out here in the boonies in southeastern Colorado. We certainly have the problem, but we unfortunately do not have that kind of support here that I'm aware of anyway. So I thought I would ask you about that. It sounds a little bit like, are you familiar with Dressed for Success?
Yes. And that was yes, that's one of the things that we did. Yes. And I mean, we did a lot of different things, and particular gathering together things in all ages and sexes for the children, because they often leave with just the clothes on their back, putting together things for children that their needs for school and clothing. And so it's a dire situation for these families that are trying to escape this abuse.
Right. Well, another thing that came to my attention the other day on Facebook, in fact, was if a person has luggage that they don't need anymore, that is still serviceable and usable and presentable, that would be something to consider to donate to these places and to your social services places. Because when you have, especially young children that are moved from one place to another, at least they have the dignity of being able to put their belongings in a suitcase, because a lot of them have nothing but a sack or a pillowcase to put their things in. And I'm sure this is true of women who are trying to relocate and get out of the area. So that's something to think about as well.
Absolutely. And they are doing that. I mean, it must be really widespread, is that we are doing that in this county now and collecting suitcases and taking them to the Wise Hope House. So there are a lot of good things too that people can do out there to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think unless you're in that situation, you just don't stop and think about the very simplest things that would mean so much to people.
Another thing that I wanted to add to my experience in education is I had a lot of experiences with grandparents and others that helped take care of children that were abandoned, so to speak, or not because parents just walked off and left, but because of drug usage or alcoholism, as you had mentioned earlier. And that was also the case. And you know, there are so many grandparents that have stepped up, and it's very difficult, perhaps, after you get to be 60 and suddenly you have young children in your household again. I really have to praise them for being part of their family and still being there for their grandchildren.
Exactly. I know of more than one situation right here in town, Sylvia, with grandparents who are raising a child. And I think in one situation, there is even a great grandparent couple. And it's just amazing how these people will step up and do this. And it's sad that the original parents are not in a state to be able to take care of their own children. But sadly, in society, it's becoming more and more prevalent.
I've seen that over many years. That is also repeated in the book Gene as well, because the grandparents are the ones that help them get on their feet.
Yes. And I don't want to give away too much in the book, but when they were headed to the grandparents' house, all I could think was, oh, please, don't let the grandparents be the type of couple that are like, well, it's not our problem, you know. I was so glad when they turned out to be a loving couple that took them in.
They were.
So we're about halfway through our show, and at this point, I make listeners aware that you are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Dr. Sylvia Hornback. Sylvia is an author. She is also an educator of long standing. She has served as a principal and as a school superintendent for over two decades now. She has received the National Blue Ribbon School Principal Award from the U.S. Secretary of Education. She wrote her first book her first book entitled The Mallard Conspiracy in 2018. The book that we are discussing today is her most recent release entitled Gene, like a person's name. I don't know if I'm enunciating well, but it's spelled J-E-A-N-N-E, Gene, a person's name. This book was excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we are discussing that book now. It's based on the abuse and abandonment of some children back in the World War II era. She brings many different issues into this story, and we will further discuss that. Sylvia can be found on her web. She can learn more information about her on her website at sylviahornback.com, and she's also on Facebook, but I'm going to refer my listeners to my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. There you can listen to the show on archive. You will find also the other shows that we have recorded. But when you go to Sylvia's show, there's more information there, and you click on that, and that's where you will find Sylvia's website and her Facebook link and a bit more information about Sylvia. Sylvia, you reflect your strong faith in God through your writing in your characters, especially your main character, Gene. Would you share with us a dark time in your life and how you found your way back to the light?
Well, I thought about this. I guess we all times in our lives, and I have to tell you that earlier when you asked me about when did I find Christ or to have Christ in my life, it was early childhood. So I have always gone to God and to pray and to find my way when any time was dark. I guess the thing that I want to emphasize are the women that I wrote this book for. Because if I want to really talk about a time that was dark and it took them into the light, I want to share with you that they found their faith through grandparents, as we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Some were dropped at the back door of the church on Sunday morning.
Oh,
and the parents
my.
Left them there. And then one person in particular that was left at boarding school, and a Catholic boarding school, and the nuns and the priest helped her to find her way through that really dark hour of being abandoned there. She didn't go home to visit, and it is another story that I will be telling in depth in my next novel, but it is those people, those women who found God in different ways, in many different ways, that they relied on God. And one of the themes that Jean uses in her story through the book is she prayed for strength, for help. And sometimes we think, well, I don't know how to pray. Well, sometimes all you can do is just ask for those two things. And I found that with the women that suffered this abuse and how as adult women, they were also able to deal with times that they were frightened and afraid and didn't trust, how they could go to prayer and just ask for giving them strength and guiding them, and that's all they asked, and that gave them the power to become the women they were.
Yes, that's very interesting. And I think sometimes, Sylvia, our darkest time is when we are seeing others that are special in our lives, whether it be loved ones or very dear friends, experiencing pain. I think sometimes that can be a very dark time for us. And
well, I think it,
of course, that's when we take those concerns to the Lord in prayer.
I agree with you, because it was heart-rending. And I have to tell you that there were times that it took me, it was so powerful and so heartbreaking to write this story down and to write it with the feeling that came from those women. And in order to do them justice, I had to, you know, make it as real as possible. So therefore, it really broke my heart at the time. And you have prayers for them and others that are in the same situation. That's why I hope that anybody that reads Jean perhaps can take something away from it that will help them gather that strength as well.
And I'm sure that it will, because I thought you did an excellent job with that myself.
Thank you so much.
Sylvia, another major theme in your novel was family loyalty. What circumstances have you observed that bring family members closer together through your experience as an educator? And I'm sure that's where you draw most of your knowledge from.
Well, of that, and I can also make that go directly to the character Robbie, because of my little brother, and it was quite, he was quite an angel on earth. I did not say exactly in the book what his special need was, but the special needs child required so much, I guess, care and love. What I experienced was, as Robbie in the book gave back, I mean, gave much more love than you could ever think about giving to him, because it was an unconditional love that I experienced my whole life. It did cause a family loyalty, because we all loved him without question, and it was, his health was poor. When he died, of course, it was a terrible tragedy for all of us, a terrible loss, but we'd never forget what he gave us in our lives with him while he was here.
There's just something about them that it's almost, they radiate this innocence.
Absolutely.
And this trust that you just don't find in other people. And I just loved Robbie. In your book, he was just, he was great.
So that was truly an inspiration from my little brother. And it gave me a great deal of pleasure to be able to convey what kind of love we felt for him, because so many people are afraid of a special needs child. They're afraid to approach them. They're afraid they don't know how to talk to them. I was hopeful that that would give people comfort and to know, have the knowledge of even the abusive mother loved Robbie. So that was... And the great thing about the grandparents in the story is they just accepted everyone as is. That's it. You're here. Your family. We take care of family. So it was a great, as you said, loyalty. I liked the way you picked up on that.
As an educator, Sylvia, what changes have you seen in the way that special needs children are treated by our education system and by society in general? Do you think we have made great strides in that area, or do you think that there's still a lot to be done?
I think we've made great strides in that area. Just from the time that, well, for me growing up, you know, they had a special room or a place for children, or people kept their child at home. They did not send them to school. And so then we got to school, then we had special classes, and then in the 70s, I think they were educated to teach children with special needs and all kinds of special needs. The school where I was principal in Austin, we had several units of children, and they were integrated into our regular classrooms, and our children were absolutely fabulous in relating to each of those children, where we had, it was all a normal, regular classroom where they could all be together and each child could learn about differences in children.
Didn't they call that mainstreaming? Is that the correct term?
They had called it mainstreaming, yes. And we did that. That was back in the 90s. But that was part of one of the reasons why we won the Blue Ribbon Award, was because of our integrating of our special needs.
Well, it's certainly a wonderful thing that you were able to implement there, Sylvia, and I'm sure it meant a lot to a lot of parents who were in that situation. So God bless you for that.
Thank you. It meant a lot to the teachers and the children as well.
I'm sure it did. Patriotism and loyalty to country are another important facet that you brought out in your novel. Do you think the attitude toward these two things has changed considerably since World War II, since your World War II setting and your story?
Well, I think and I've lived through a huge piece of that during the Vietnam era, when our armed forces would come home and when the military would come in, how they were spit on and they were disrespected, and it broke my heart. And then we seem like we just keep going in circles about how we feel. And I think truth is getting out there more. And hopefully we're understanding what young men go out there to do for their country and who's making the decisions for them to be in that place. So, yes, from World War II to where people were ready to fight, and of course we were attacked, and they were ready to fight for their country. And I think the young men in the Vietnam era were sadly mistreated, and women as well. The place that we have now and going out to fight, I think that there is a respect that has come back for our military, which I hope that everyone understands the kind of sacrifices that they make in doing that.
Yeah, and the situations are so different today with the kind of fighting that occurs. Sylvia, I think you talked about what you hope readers will take away from reading Jean.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the book that you wish we had discussed and we just haven't gotten to it?
There are some great historical points in the book. And I don't know if you remember or not. This is just one aside, if you will, with Eleanor Roosevelt when she had her radio show.
Yes, I love that.
So that was kind of, you know, right along with Patty's, you know, show. And I guess what was important about it is that she announced what had happened the night before, because Congress hadn't met, and FDR made his historical announcement about declaring war the following day. So she, that is, and I listened to the radio shows in order to put that in the book.
I was going to ask you, that sounded like it was totally authentic.
It was. It is, yes.
Wow.
So many of the historic moments in there are actually, you know, authentic and actually happened.
I thought that was pretty neat. I like to read historical fiction anyway. And when you have an author that really takes the time to add that authenticity to it, that makes it really special. I took note of that, yes, and I should have mentioned that, and I didn't. You mentioned your previous book, The Mallard Conspiracy, that it's about water rights. Can you expound on that a little bit? Boy, that sounds like something that would really interest me, because that's a big deal around here.
Yes, it is, and it is also, I've done actual things, about a couple, and they're ranchers in Texas, and they have a blog about water rights, and so there are enough interested people in the surrounding area, in Oklahoma and Colorado and New Mexico, that also respond to their water rights and what has happened with what the EPA has done and what they haven't done, and what the Clean Water Act and how that interacted. But what's happened is in the book you have the antagonist, who is the someone who wants to make money off of stealing water and
yes.
selling it to foreign entities. He is afraid that this blog, in other words, and so they go out to eliminate this couple, and so it is a struggle between them, and they have a sheriff that is investigating terrible things that have happened. This person that is stealing water across the United States, not just parts of Texas, but across the United States, that is putting, and it's associated also with the government and how they are, he has a link between them, the government, other countries, and how he gets water out of the United States to sell it.
That's what that
story is about.
Oh my goodness, I have got to read that, Sylvia. That sounds awesome.
Well,
wow.
It's very fast moving. It was fun to write. I really enjoyed writing that book. And I've had people want to write a sequel, and I will write one to it. But right now I'm writing a book called Belonging. And I have also finished a book called A Very Dairy Christmas, which is totally not what some of my other books are. But it's a delightful little book that'll come out before Christmas.
Oh, neat. Very good. Well, Sylvia, we're about at the end of our time. Is there anything else you would like to bring up that we didn't get to discuss earlier?
I just hope that, no, I think you've done such a wonderful job of covering the topics, and tough topics as it is, and I am hopeful that it will reach some people that the book Gene can help.
Definitely. Well, Sylvia, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a delight to have you here. And like I say, I thoroughly enjoyed your book. And I urge my listeners to look it up. The name of it is Gene. And I will also put an Amazon link on my website as well for folks to purchase this book, because it was really had some very strong messages in it. So again, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Sylvia, for taking the time to spend with us, and may God bless you in your writing.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thanks again, Patty.
To our listeners, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today, and I'd like to emphasize to you, please look up Sylvia's website. You'll find that on my website, which is pattysheen, pattysheen.com. And also, I urge you to get her book, Gene. It really covers many different issues, and it was an excellent read. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. God bless you. Hope to have you with us next time.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.